The 15th parak of Mesilas Yesharim. Until now, Mesilas Yesharim has explained the concept of Parishus and the various Chalokim, Chelke Parishus, being Parish from various pleasures, being careful in Halacha, and Parishus B'Minhogim in conduct between people. The 15th parak is Bedarke Kinias HaParishus. What are the ways a person will acquire this midah of precious? And it begins, Hine, Haderech hamuvcho leknoises haprishus, the ideal way to acquire precious, hu sheyistakel ha'odem begriyus ta'anugus almazeh. A person should think and examine the problems of, or the lack of importance of pleasures of this world, their intrinsic insignificance, and all the big problems that can come from engaging and pursuing these pleasures. Kihine, mashamata hateva el atunugos ha'ela, achistakol kach koich v'sachbulos la'afish mehem, that which inclines a person naturally towards these pleasures to the point that he needs to come up with something to separate himself from them. What lures a person to these things? Hu pitui ha'inayim. It all begins with the eyes. Haniftin b'mar hadvarim ashu tovar v'chayra. He sees things and he craves things that he sees, and it looks to him like this must be good. Wasn't that the reason or the cause of the very first sin that occurred? Like the Torah testifies. The woman saw that the fruit of the tree was good to eat and desirous to her eyes. She took from the fruit and she ate. It all began with what she saw. When a person recognizes and realizes that that which he thought was good was really an illusion. It really wasn't good. And it's not healthy, it doesn't last. But the effects of it, the bad effects, are true. Or they will likely occur. When he sees through the appearance that lures him, he will reject it. He won't want it. This is what you have to train your mind. To recognize the weakness of these pleasures and their falsehood. Until naturally he'll reject them. And at that point it won't be difficult to live without them. A lot of things that we desire, a lot of things that we're pulled after, it's because we see them and that makes us want them. And it takes some time to realize that it's not really worth all that much. It's not as good or as pleasurable as we may have thought. And it's a goal to train yourself that don't trust first impressions. You see something and you think, oh, this must be great. It's probably not that great. And you have to learn to let your seichel override what you see. Now, our desire to eat and the pleasure we get from food is a very clear, tangible thing. But when you think about it, does it last? Doesn't it get lost? You can only eat as much as you can swallow at a time. And as soon as it's passed through to your stomach, that memory is gone, it's as if it never happened. Wouldn't you be the same degree of satisfied if you eat fattened swans or you eat whole wheat bread? If you have enough to satisfy, what's the difference? In the end, you're full. And then you start thinking about what are the side effects of eating the fattened birds? What illnesses can come from that? And at a minimum, how do you feel after you eat? Do you feel weighed down? And the vapors that cloud his mind. So I don't know if he's talking about medicine of his time. But you know, well, we know today, that when you eat certain foods, your body works hard to digest them, it pulls blood from your brain. There's a reason why people are tired after eating a heavy meal. When your body is busy digesting, it doesn't have the same blood flow to guts, going to the stomach to help you digest. You eat lighter foods, you don't need a nap. You eat chalk, you need to take a nap. This concept, it's a real thing. If you eat heavier foods, the blood is directed more to help you digest than it is to other areas. So by the end of eating whatever you're eating, you're going to be full regardless. So now, do you want to be full on things that are light, things that are heavy? How's it going to affect you? And now if you ask someone up front, do you want to have something that'll tire you out, or won't make you think straight, will maybe not good for your health? You want to have that. It's really not good, and the bad is real. And people try to do this with the nutritional labels on food packaging. Get an idea of what you're getting into before you eat it. How many calories is it? How much fat is in it? How much salt is in it? Whatever. Maybe that will help dissuade you from taking some of these things. I heard one nutritionist say, can you pronounce the words in the ingredients? If you can't pronounce the ingredients, it may not be something you want to eat. You want to have foods that you know what they are, you can pronounce them, they're simple ingredients. Once you start getting into all these chemicals, is that what you want to put in your body? But it looks good. Okay, it looks good. Right, it looks good. But is it good for you? And that's a concept that we have to be mature about and realize that just because it looks good doesn't mean it is good. And this is really true of all pleasures in this world. If you really think about it, you'll see that even our imagined good is temporary. And the problems that can occur are difficult, they're harsh, they're lengthy. No one who is a thinking person would subject himself to all the troubles and dangers for the temporary goodness that may come out of it. And this should be simple. When a person trains himself and thinks about this, little by little, he'll be free of the bonds of foolishness that he's tied up in of these physical things. He will not be convinced to do things and indulge in things that are false. As yimasbahen, he'll reject them. He'll learn to take from this world what you need, the question that I wrote before, and stay away from those things that you don't need. If you think about this, that's how you acquire this trait of Precious. If you don't think about it, if you're going to act foolishly, you're going to lose this concept of Precious. Now, if you spend time with royalty, people of stature, who pursue honor, and they're busy with vanity, when you see the glory, the greatness, how can you avoid wanting that and desiring that? And even if you don't let your Yetzer Hara get the better of you, or your Yetzer get the better of you, but you didn't escape the battle. It's going to be a battle. When you're in battle, you're in danger. On this one, Melech writes, better to go to a base Ovel, to a Shiva house, than to go to a base Mishnah. Why is it better? So the way the Ramchal is teaching it, in this context, when you go to the base Ovel, so you're not lured to strive for things, to desire things that you would want. When you go to a chasana, you go to a base Mishnah, you're going to see nice clothing, you're going to see nice jewelry, you're going to see beautiful centerpieces, and you're going to want these things. And there's no benefit from these things. It'll be, but just because the things you see will give you a, and even if you control it, say, no, it's not for me, it's not important, I don't need it, but it's going to be a battle. V'yarkim in hakol, who has spoiled this, and the most precious thing would be private time, to introspect, meditate, ki kemosha meisir me'inov inyani ha'olam, when you take your eyes away from things of this world, ki ma'avichem dasim yilibo, then you don't have a desire for it. K'var hizkiz David HaMelech al v'shalom b'shvach espoid, this David HaMelech would praise this concept of being alone, v'amar mi'itin li evikayona, I wish I could fly like the dove, hine archik nudoit, I would wander far off, alim b'midbar, Selah, off in the midbar. V'anevi'im, Eliyahu, v'Elisha, matzanu hayosim miyachdim ekoim alohar b'neis boidusam, we know that Eliyahu Navi, Elisha Navi, would go off into the mountains and be alone. V'achacham ha-chasidim yishonim zal hocha b'kvaseyim, the chachamim, the early chasidim, go in their footsteps, ki matzu lem ze'em tza'i yosim muchan likno shleim v'saprishus. They found this is a tool to acquire the perfection of Prishus. L'mana shal yaviyim hevli chavrehem l'ha'abil gamis hem kmosam. That they shouldn't be convinced by the nonsense of their neighbors and friends to be like them. U'mimashet serach li zoher b'kniyas ha'prishusu. But one thing you have to be careful with, a word of caution. Shlo yirtze ha'odim l'daleik v'likpots el ha'kotza acharon shebo rega echad. Do not strive to jump and skip to an extreme level of Prishus right away. It will not work out. Prishus is something that's done in small increments, little by little. Today a little Prishus, tomorrow a little more. Until you become accustomed to it, it becomes a second nature to you. So he concludes with a word of caution that you should not be extreme in your attempt to achieve Prishus because it's going to backfire. It's not going to work. So there's a very simple yesod that he's trying to drive home over here, and we often learn it in the third parasha of Shema, the Sasuru. Pasuk says, "Don't go after Einechem Levavchem," and Rashi means the Chazal that there are two Sirsuri Arvera. There are two brokers to get a person to do something wrong. The Ayin Ro'eh V'Lev Chomed. The eye sees and the heart desires. And that's where it starts. You see something, then you want something, and now what happens next? So if it's something forbidden, I could be lured and do something wrong. If it's something mutter, maybe it's something that I don't need and I really should refrain from, I should be poivish from. So that's this discussion. And clearly, if you wouldn't see it, you wouldn't have this drive to acquire it or to indulge in it. It's because you see it. And he begins with the first case, with Chava. There's a very problem. She saw the fruit, and the fruit looked good. And she wanted it. She craved it. And that's where it starts. It starts with that first seeing it. If she never would have seen it, you can't crave what you don't see, what you don't know about, what you're unaware of. There's a language in the Gemara that a person is not mis'avil masha in avrois. Unless you see it, you don't desire it. We become enslaved to our desires when we see things. It's the things that we see that we want. If you don't see it, if you don't know about it, you live fine without it. You don't know where it exists. So, I need that. There's a concept we talk about called Shmiras Einayim. Shmiras Einayim isn't watching your eyes. So on one level, it's usually referring to men, could refer to women too, of not seeing things that are inappropriate. There are things that are inappropriate to see. Shmiras Einayim is not to see these things. Don't look at things that are inappropriate. So that itself is a challenge, because you don't want to see things that are inappropriate, but sometimes they're on a billboard. You're driving on the highway and it's staring you in the face, so you have to look away from the billboard but keep your eyes on the road. There are so many examples like that, where it's not something you introduce into your home or your office or your phone or whatever. It's just out there, and I pass it every day, and you have to look away. That's Shmiras Einayim, a concept of not looking at everything around you, especially when things that you see are inappropriate. And inappropriate, again, when I say don't see things that are inappropriate, I imagine most people think I'm talking about things that have to do with immorality, things to do with arayas. And it's true, you do have to be careful what you see when it comes to arayas. But you know, you should also be careful what you see when it comes to violence. To see an act of ritzicha, to see an act of hezek, of someone hurting someone else, that's not something you should see. It's damaging. It's not something that you should be seeing. That's also a Shmiras Einayim. It's different than arayos. It's maybe not something that you'll have a taiv, I hope, or a chemda, but it's not good for your neshama. It's not good for your neshama to see acts of violence. That's not good. It's not good to see it in real life, chas v'shalom, lo aleinu. And it's not good to see it in a recreation of it, even though it's actors and the like. It's not good. It's not good to see violence. Not good for the neshama. So these aren't good things. This should be Shmiras Einayim from all things that are inappropriate. It's not just inappropriate in the context of arayos, that's for sure, it's there, but it's for other things too. There are things, why is a yid seeing these things? That's not us. That's not something that should interest us, or another way of putting it, it's not something which should entertain us. Why is that entertaining? People find that as part of entertainment. So if you tell me Esav, okay, when it comes to Esav, the pasuk says, achab b'chatichya. What does it mean, achab b'chatichya? So you could say, literally means achab b'chatichya, you live with your sword. You live with your sword. So I earn a living with my sword. So one of the mahalakim of the Rishonim is achab b'chatichya, you get your chiyas from this. This gives them a geshmak. This is what gives a geshmak for a goy. He enjoys watching people beat each other up. He enjoys people tackling each other. He enjoys watching two boxers beat each other's brains out. This is a geshmak for them. This is a chiyas, achab b'chatichya. Okay, that's Esav. It's not Klai Yisrael. It's not Klai Yisrael. Klai Yisrael is not, we don't say about Yaakov Avinu achab b'chatichya. So we live in a world, we live among Esav, we live among Goyim, we're in Golos, so there's a lot of achab b'chatichya all around us. Is that something you're supposed to be watching? Is that something we're supposed to be enjoying? Is that something we're supposed to be entertained by? A yid's entertainment is not the same as a goy's entertainment. It shouldn't be the same. So that's certainly, in my opinion, another example of Shmiras Einayim. You have to watch yourself from seeing that too. So Shmiras Einayim is much more than just when it deals with things that are improper, when you deal with morality issues. I think it has to do with behavior b'chlal. In general, you should see good behavior, you shouldn't see bad behavior. But in the context of Precious, the concern is that the things you see create a desire to have and to indulge and to eat or to do and whatever that may be. So this is a challenge. It's a challenge because on the one hand, there are things that we see that we don't ask to see. And on top of it, sometimes we're guilty of looking at things that create this taiva. And I've given this example in the past, and that might be a little extreme, but I don't think I'm so extreme. More and more fine organizations trying to raise money with a Chinese auction. And you get these books in the mail, these pamphlets, catalogs, whatever, of all these amazing prizes, and they want you to send your tzedakah money to that organization and you could possibly win this prize. I'm guessing 90%, maybe more, of the things in these books are things you don't need. These aren't things people need. Because why would you put money in a thing to get something you need? These are things that are luxury items. These are things that you would never buy for yourself, but they're indulging yourself. So, Stamazoy, I'm going to get on the plane and fly to New York and eat dinner out and go shopping and fly right back the next day. I'm not going to do that. But surprise in the things. Oh, that's kishmak. Things like that. Things that are not typical. One magazine had one of these tzedakah things was go with your girlfriend to Florida for 3 days and you get massages and whatever else you want with your girlfriend for 3 days in Miami. It's not something you would do on your own. But surprise. Okay, it's a chab. But a lot of the things you see in this book, I'll say, Taka, that's not a good idea. Why can't I do that? And you start, a lot of these things could become, not saying they do, but it could become things that you actually desire and want because you saw them. You never would have thought about it in a million years. But now that you see it, and Taka looks nice, it looks geschmack, it sounds like fun, now I feel like I have to do it. And there's a whole world of marketing which teaches me how to market products or things and get people to want to buy things or do things that aren't necessarily in their best interest, but they have a product to sell, they have a venue they want you to attend, so they work on convincing you to come. The Baal Seichel understands that this is, you know, if I want to give them that stuff, I'll give them stock of money, and if it's fun or entertaining to pick a few things, good to hate. But some people actually begin to wish they had those things and feel their life is missing something because they don't have some of these items in the book, and it becomes a challenge for them. So, again, I might be a little extreme on this, but I do think to a certain extent there's a truth that if I never opened up a stupid book, I wouldn't think about these things, I wouldn't think I'm missing anything in my life, I think everything is fine with me, I wouldn't need this particular type of shaitel. I kind of wonder how the world went from the wigs that were affordable to the world of wigs that were unaffordable, to the point that everyone has to get wigs that are unaffordable. How did that happen? Where did that change happen? And I think part of it was these Chinese auctions and these prizes, and then this one gets it, so you know, no one needs a wig that expensive, but oh, good surprise, I'll put in for it, and someone does get it, and then the neighbor says, well, she has it, so I should buy one too. Eventually became perfectly normal, commonplace for people, not to say you mortgage your house to buy a wig, but it's a little ridiculous how expensive they have become. It wasn't always like that. Wigs were not that expensive. People weren't spending that kind of money on wigs. Are they nicer? Are they more comfortable? Probably. Okay. I can understand that maybe these higher-end, newer wigs are of a better quality, and maybe they're not, but let's say they are. Let's give them the benefit of the doubt. They're better quality, and they're more comfortable. I'm fine with that. These comforts are very important, but the jump in price is really crazy. What we have watched over time, the cost of a frum lady trying to look like a mensch, cover her hair, the expense has become, it's nuts. It's just absolute craziness. What has become acceptable? What has become acceptable? And I think a little bit is because what was once the realm of the very wealthy became, I have to have that too. And after all, it's a mitzvah of covering my hair, so why shouldn't I? Whatever. No, it's just, I think that's how it happens. I might be wrong, but I think that is the problem. We see things, we want things. If you never saw it, you wouldn't want it. And that's that. You know, no one is going to argue that wealthy people can afford nicer clothing. So does that mean I have to spend that kind of money on my clothing now too? Well, no, they have a different salary than I do. They have more money to spend on these things. So hey, spend it on the nice clothes. It's not where I live. It's not where I'm at. Cars. Some people can afford very expensive cars. So I know I can't afford an expensive car. I have a regular car. And most people aren't sold on the idea that I have to have the much higher end cars. A car is a car. You have to get around. You need a car to get from here to there, and you have a car. But someone who obsesses or studies other people, they want it. They want it. They want a car. It's a nicer car. It's more comfortable. It's a nicer ride. This is all the good reasons. All kinds of reasons why you need a car that costs 2 years salary. You know, the fact is, we don't need these things. These things are luxuries. They're called a luxury item. We don't need luxury items until you see them. If you never would have seen it, you're not going to need it. You don't need it. don't see it. So yeah, in theory, I know there's such a thing that other people have very expensive cars, but it's nothing to do with me, nothing to do with my life. But when my neighbor has it in his driveway, all of a sudden, so what am I? Chop liver? I also should have in my driveway the same thing. If you see it, then you feel you need it. And that's the problem. You really need it? You don't really need it. You don't need it, but you feel like you need it. And it's a struggle. So sometimes you conquer and you win. And you win. But it's a struggle. So it's really part of the key is to avoid. You don't have to struggle b'chlal if you don't see it in the first place. Or if you can come to this level, which is a high level, where you realize, I'm not interested in these things. These things are not important to me. It will not improve my quality of life. It will not be beneficial for me. It's not saying with a nicer car it's going to be harmful, chas v'shalom. He used that in the context of various foods. But certain luxuries, if you come to a madrega of being happy with where you are in life, I don't need these things, it's a seichel. It's using your mind to realize that these things do not define me. These things do not make me a better person. These things are nice if you can afford them, very nice. I forgive them, gesunte heit, you enjoy it. None do with me. I'm perfectly fine who I am, where I am, driving the car I'm driving. I don't lose any sleep at night about it. That's a madrega. It's a madrega. The world we live in almost like goes out of its way to make your neighbors envious of you. As if it's a madrega, a maila, to show your neighbors you have the brand new windows, and you have the brand new lawn for whatever it is. You hear the advertisements, be the envy of your neighbors. By Yidden, there's no maila being the envy of anybody. We don't make a goal in life to make everyone envious of us. There are some people who get a lot of credit. These are people who can afford very nice cars, make beautiful chassid, and they don't. They keep it toned down like everyone else. They don't want to stick out. They don't want to be ostentatious. They don't want to flaunt their wealth. It's a madrega. There are people who do. I'm not saying they're bad people. They will spend a lot of money on tzedakah. They'll give a lot of money to important institutions. And then when they make a simcha, they spend a lot of money on the simcha too. But there is something to not doing that. Just like everyone else, same foods that everyone expects at every other simcha, the same everything. It doesn't have to be that everything is on a different notch, different level. Even if you can afford it. Because there's no mitzvah to do things to create in other people a degree of envy, a degree of chemda or taiva for things that they can't get the way you can. So from our perspective, we have to look at things that, is there a value to this? Is this good for me? Is this going to help me? Or is it just to indulge myself? Is it to fulfill a taiva, a chemda, a desire? And if you can realize it for what it is, you can pass it up. But you have to realize it starts with what you see, and then you want it, and then you figure out a way to get it, and it may not be good for you in the end. It may come to financial ruin because you're spending money on things you can't afford. It's another example like this. So there are things that we just have to have the seichel to understand, I'm fine without these things. The flip side of it is that not to do things that we can do that would make other people feel lacking in what they have. This is a big time when Americans started moving into Yerushalayim. Two-bedroom apartments were fine for the Israelis with 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 kids until the Americans came. And all of a sudden, you can't have an apartment like that. You have to have 4 or 5 bedrooms if you have a big family, Kanahara. And then all of a sudden, you have all these Americans with these bigger diras, or double dira. Now the Israelis were like, I can't live like this. How can I live with 2 bedrooms? They were like, that's fine. Until the Americans came. And then they see another way of living, and then they say, oh, I should live like that too. And it makes it very difficult if you can't afford that, and you still want it because you see it. It's the same cycle. You see something, then you want it, and it makes life difficult. So there's this midah of precious, this midah of staying away from things that are just luxuries, things that are just for pleasure, not intrinsically good for you, and it's not the kind of thing that you can just discard and become a hermit in one shot. It's the kind of thing, little by little, small areas, small things, you tell yourself, I don't need this, I'm fine without it. And that's how you build yourself up to live without these indulgences and live without these pleasures, because you don't need them. You're fine without them. Life is good without them. I'm not missing anything. And the more you behave that way, the more you think that way, the easier it becomes. And again, like we said before, you certainly can control some of the things you see, and the things that you see are the things that drive your interest and drives your chemda and your taiva and so on. So we can be careful with what we see, and be careful with what we read, and be careful with the things that we have access, so then we will have a different degree of hasagas. Our hasagas will be different, our desires are different, our interests are different, when we're not exposed to those things. But you have to know, if you're going to expose yourself to those things, it'll be more difficult, it'll be a challenge. And that all goes back to Vatera Isha, Ki Tova Eitz L'Maichel.